This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC's Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Taurus, makers of the Raging Hunter handgun. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, double nickel taxidermy. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon. Before joining Larry with today's episode, let's get a few words from Hayden Outdoors, the brand that sells land through our conservation today.
When it comes to a choice of whether to graze cattle or not, it really kind of depends on what your long-term goals are. Cattle grazing as a whole is not bad unless it's totally overdone and you overgraze the property. But there is a little bit of good in that as well, too, because you remove a lot of the grass cover and then a lot of the weeds and the wildflowers can come up that have probably been there for a long time anyway. Whether you graze cattle or not, as I mentioned, comes long-term goals. If you're really interested in wildlife, you probably want to carry on a rotational grazing type system, or you may want to totally pull the cattle off of it for a while, such as I've done here on my place. I'm Larry Wysoon, and appreciate you being with us this morning on Conservation Today, brought to you by Hayden Outdoors, the brand that sells land.
Now on with today's episode.
Thank you, David Fox, for another absolutely fantastic introduction, and welcome to DSC's Campfires. Campfire today is going to be basically me sitting around telling a story or two, but next week we've got another absolutely fantastic guest. Last week we had Mr. John Fink with Trigicon, and we'll be visiting with John again in the future. I want to learn more about the bear hunt that he talked about, and here, probably the week after this, I am going to have another dear friend on, Mr. Jim Bequette. Jim and I go back years ago to when I was the hunting editor, if you will, for Shooting Times magazine, and for a while we had another publication called Handgunning, which was John Crowley was the editor, and there again I was the hunting editor and got to do a lot of different things during those years, testing different guns, ammunition, optics, anything having to do with hunting and shooting, and had an absolutely great time doing that for a bunch of years, and truly honored to have spent time on staff. At one time we had Mr. Bill Jordan, the Border Patrolman, who was an unbelievable handgun expert when it came to fast draw and shooting and all those kind of good things. Also on staff while I was there was Sheriff Jim Wilson. One of these days I need to get Jim on this podcast. He and I, too, go back a long way. And kind of jointly, we were known as the Hats. We were the two Texans, if you will, on the staff with those publications. And dearly loved my time there. And so come back and visit us next week, and we'll talk a little bit to Jim Bequette. We've had Jim on in the past, but this time I'm going to be talking to Jim pretty much about some of the hunting adventures he's had, including hopefully about a caribou trip that he made a long time ago and 1 year when he shot what was one of the biggest grizzlies ever taken. So look forward to having him on and a few stories. And then, too, I've been on the phone with a couple of other guys. I've been around a lot in the past, and hopefully to have those guys on as well, too, and tell some of their hunting stories and a little bit about themselves. Once we get them on, I think you'll recognize their names, and you'll certainly recognize some of the things that they've done. This past several weeks, I've had the opportunity to do lots of absolutely most interesting things, including some more writing projects that I'm working on for North American Deer Hunter, the digital publication that does an absolutely fantastic job. I've been writing a fair amount, too, here as late for Sporting Classics again. Sporting Classics, I used to serve on staff there doing a column called The Long Hunter. And The Long Hunter referring to somebody who made long trips to different areas of the world, or different areas of North America, and particularly with some of the things that I've done there. The Long Hunters were those guys who many years ago, and they did indeed carry hawking rifles and kind of the era of the fur trade, if you will. But those guys that traveled around and about and looking for adventure, looking for game, looking for all kinds of good things, they were kind of referred to as Long Hunters. So going back and doing some things there for those guys at Sporting Classics, and those publications, those particular issues will be out here very, very shortly, and include a little bit about gar fishing, a little bit about some of the hunting I did on some of my own property, and then also I've got a story coming up there as well, too, about hunting coos whitetail, something I've always and dearly, truly, truly enjoyed. To me, it's kind of a cross between hunting mule deer, hunting whitetail, hunting desert bighorn sheep because of the country that you're in and because how well those little animals, and they are smaller than most whitetail deer species or subspecies, how well they blend in with their surroundings and how they earn the title of the gray ghost of the Southwest. And leading in from that is that I first learned about coos deer many, many years ago by reading the pages of Outdoor Life, and specifically the stories by one Jack O'Connor, who for many years and still should be considered kind of the dean of outdoor writing when it comes to doing with anything with guns and hunting. O'Connor was born about the turn of the century in the 1900s and kind of was at the right place at the right time from a writing perspective when magazines, talking about hard copy magazines, were the thing. There were many outdoor publications at the time, but the three biggest ones were Sports and Field, Field and Stream, and Outdoor Life. And he for years was with Outdoor Life as their shooting editor and more or less as their hunting editor as well, too. And O'Connor came along about the time for serious writing with outdoor writing, right about the time of World War II and right afterwards. And when all of our guys got home and had learned about guns, those that had not learned about guns while they were in the war, and of course most people then seemingly lived in outdoor situations or in rural areas, and pretty much everybody hunted back then, and would love to see it that way again these days. But during that time frame, O'Connor was a champion of fine guns. I'm talking about guns that, to me, I consider fine as well, too, being really nice wooded stocks with not so much stainless steel, but primarily blued steel. Optics were just becoming popular at the time, and he just was there, as I said, at the right time. But, too, he answered many, many questions, wrote about them in various columns that he did for Outdoor Life. But then it was one of those things, he hunted the world. He got to hunt India. He got to hunt in Asia and Pakistan and in Iran and of course in Africa, and he was known all over for hunting all over North America as well too, particularly the different sheep species. And he may well have been one of the first people to complete what's now known as the Grand Slam, which includes the Dall Ram up in the far north and the Stone Ram in the British Columbia, the Rocky Mountain Bighorn, which kind of runs all the way down into from Canada and New Mexico, and then the desert sheep that kind of started over on from about Utah and Nevada and ran south all the way down in Sonora and in Sonora, Mexico, that is. But it was through the writing of O'Connor that I learned about the Coos white-tailed deer. And actually, when you get right down to it, it probably should be pronounced properly cows, because Dr. Elliot Cowes was a surgeon, a field surgeon with the cavalry units many, many years ago, and he was the one who first described that particular little species of white-tailed deer, that are subspecies, if you will, of white-tailed deer that existed in the Southwest, and it's also known kind of as Arizona white-tail. I hunted them several times in Mexico and down at Sonora and Chihuahua, and one of my favorite hunts ever was able to take three or four really nice rams. It was like hunting desert bighorn sheep, because often we were up hunting high in the mountains above the sheep, looked down at some of the top of the pinnacles and looked down and you'd see desert bighorn sheep and there'd be coos deer up above where the desert bighorns were. And then of course the mule deer in Sonora, Mexico lived pretty much down in the flat country. Interesting thing about these little deer, they're really gray, they're really secretive. Like I mentioned, they blend in so extremely well with their background. And I'm talking about one that's really accepted as a really good antlered buck, it will generally have 8 points, maybe 10 points. And if you're into scoring, it will score about 100. Now, there's lots of regular white-tailed deer that different subspecies scattered across North America that will have bigger antlers even as a yearling as compared to what most coos or cows white-tailed deer have when they're mature. But I've been fortunate to shoot some of them, and I've been fortunate too to hunt some of the same ranges that Jack O'Connor did many years ago. And one of the reasons I keep bringing up O'Connor is there is a Jack O'Connor Hunting Heritage and Education Center up in Lewiston, Idaho. It was established there a few years ago, and it's one of those places that if you're into hunting and you're into that time frame of the hunting in the 1950s through about the 1970s, and even before that, it's a place you really need to visit. And unfortunately, I guess these days, not many people know Jack O'Connor. As some of those of us who've been around, say, at least three score years. There was a time when I couldn't wait to get the next issue of Outdoor Life to see what O'Connor had been hunting and where he'd been hunting and listen to his stories. He's one of these gentlemen that was a great storyteller, but also in so doing imparted a great amount of knowledge about hunting particular species, about the land, about the guns. And he did it in a manner to where a lot of times you learn things you really didn't realize you learned them until considerably later. That center up on the there in Lewiston, Idaho, sits on the banks of the Snake River and Nez Perce County, if you will, of absolutely beautiful, beautiful setting. A lot of O'Connor's mounts that he had, or at least some of them, particularly some of the sheep mounts and some of the that he's got. There's a couple of different, or maybe even as many as three different tiger mounts that he and his wife Eleanor, who was also a great, great hunter of some renown, quite well. Actually, she ended up, when we look at the sheep side of things, the biggest sheep that it was taken by the O'Connor family was taken by Miss Eleanor, and it surpassed Jack's best sheep by several inches, if you will, particularly in terms of score. And both his and her mounts of those Dall sheep are there in that center. Had a great, great time. There were three things that really made that event, which I was able to attend thanks to Dr. Wayne Van Zwol, who many of you know is an absolutely outstanding writer, not only about guns, but from a historical aspect as well, too. Several years ago, I was invited by Wayne to be one of the guest speakers, if you will, at the annual event that they have there at the O'Connor Center. And unfortunately, for about 3 years running, by the time I got the invite, which is usually fairly early in the year, I'd already had some other commitments that I could not get out of. And so this year, things changed. I had a call from Wayne, and I told him when he called, he said, "We'd love to have you." He said, "I've been trying to get you there for the last few years." And I said, "Give me the date, and I'll exit out on every calendar I've got, because this is kind of on my bucket list when you get right down to it. I was a great fan of O'Connor, one of my true all-time heroes, not only from a hunting aspect, but from a journalism aspect as well, too. And people don't know about it so well, but he was a great conservationist in helping get a lot of different things started that helped to perpetuate habitat and help perpetuate the animals as well. So finally, I found out the date from him, and we got it on the calendar, and I was able to attend this year back in the early part of June. Now, every year they have this event, and it's also a fundraiser at the night afterwards, and usually it's the governor of Wyoming, and it's a keynote speaker of that event, and that was the case again this year. But I want to back off just a little bit, and one of the great things about it, that event, is it's kind of a panel discussion. There are usually several writers there, and this year I had the opportunity to spend time as one of those writers, and that got up there in front of the panel in front of a fairly sized good group of people, and basically it was a question and answer thing from a couple of different people who had prepared questions. They were not given to us, obviously, until we got there, which made it even that much more fun for those of us on the panel. But was on the panel with a very, very dear friend, Jim Zumbo. Zumbo and I, oh my gosh, we've been friends going on 40 years, and one of the true all-time greats when it comes to outdoor writing. There's a tremendous guy, loves to fish. I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in the past, never as much as I wanted to, both hunting and fishing with Jim. And of course, a lot of times we bring Rick Lambert, Miranda's dad, the country entertainer, into the picture as well, too. And between the three of us, we kind of call ourselves kind of the three amigos, if you get right down to it. I've had so much great time with him, and to share the time with him and share the stage with him, oh my gosh. Ron Spomer. Spomer and I have been friends almost as long as Jim and I have, and he too is one of the all-time greats when it comes to outdoor writing, but also one of the really fantastic, bar none, one of the very best outdoor photographers when it comes to anything having to do with hunting, but also with the outdoors in terms of bird life. And one of these guys that's got a great sense of humor and all the really kind of good things. I used to do a segment on a show called Whitetail Revolution that he and I would take opposite sides on any question that was sent in, and got a chance to sit down with him numerous times. Sometimes what was interesting about that is the producers would get in questions and they'd say, "Okay, Larry, you're going to take the pro side of this. Ron, you're going to take the con side of it." And it might have been such that I was very much opposed to what I was discussing, and a lot of times Ron was kind of opposed to what he was discussing as being an advocate of it, but it made us both probably better writers, better hunters, and better conservationists because we did so. Had the chance, like I said, to share many hunts with Ron over the years, never as many as I wanted to. And then for years, I had a show called Winchester's World of Whitetail with Larry Wysoon. Did that show for 3 years, and 3 years we did it. It was either the number one or number two rated show in all outdoor television and programming, if you will. And when I left, Chris Dorsey and I had sat down, and I told Chris that I was leaving because some other projects that I also wanted to work on and some things going on. And he said, you got anybody you want to recommend that we can use to replace you? And I said, there's never a question in my mind. It's got to be Ron Spomer. There's nobody like Spomer that I feel like can do the job or is knowledgeable and will do as great a job as earthly possible to really carry on the tradition of the show. And he did for several years. So Ron was on on the table there as well, too. And then also it was Tom Gresham. Now, most of y'all know Tom from Gun Talk. Tom also happens to be a son of a hero of mine, and Tom, too, is one of my heroes. But Gritch Gresham, the great Gritch Gresham that for years wrote for Sports and Field and all kinds of other things, was one of the innovators on the old initial TV show, when you get right down to it, that popularized hunting many years ago, The American Sportsman, which was on ABC. And then you also may remember him from the Miller Lite commercials as well, too. Always wore a very distinctive hat, had very distinctive sideburns, but great sense of humor. And from over in Natchitoches, Louisiana, where I've had the pleasure of spending a little time and sitting down with him. And years ago, digressing here a little bit, but I'd been doing a lot of work with the Budweiser distributors across the country and had taken Augie Bush and Augie Four on some hunts and on places in South Texas. And that was about the time, the tail end of the Miller Lite thing, and when with the commercials that they had, they approached me about being the spokesperson from the outdoors for Budweiser. And oh my God, I was truly, truly honored. And I thought, oh, is this a correct career move at the time? And so I thought, well, I'll get in touch with Gritch Gresham. So through a dear friend, Wayne Fears, who we'll have on here one of these days, Wayne gave me Gritz's phone number. I called Gritz, and Gritz and I had a long discussion and finally ended up with kind of saying, young man, which I was a whole lot younger then, you're too young to do this right now. He said, it's going to pigeonhole you. I know it's a great opportunity in a lot of ways. He said, but I see other things coming your way. And he said, that would probably stand in the way of you getting to do some of the things you'll get to do in life farther down the way. He said, if you were 20 years older, I'd say absolutely, this is the right time. But I always appreciated Gritz's advice, and he gave me the right advice, by golly. And as I mentioned, too, with Tom, his son, Tom and I have been friends for a long, long time as well, too. And I've had the opportunity to be on his radio show a time or two. And he was very much involved in a lot of the different outdoor TV work years ago. And so I had a chance to, again, revisit and spend time with Tom. Diana Rupp, Miss Diana and I go back several years, and she, of course, is the editor of Sports Afield and has done an unbelievably fantastic job there. Over the years since she's became editor, I've written several articles for them as a freelancer, and I have nothing but respect for this lady. She is truly a great outdoors person, an unbelievably great editor and journalist, and one of those ladies who has long been and hopefully will long continue to be a true ambassador for hunting, and particularly for getting more and more ladies and girls into the great sport of hunting. The one guy that we had on the panel that I'd never had a chance to meet before was Mr. Don Thomas. Now, without realizing it, I had read a lot of his things. He's been writing outdoor articles and books for a long, long time, and has been very much connected with Gray Sporting Journal, which to me is very similar to Sporting Classics, but in a little bit different way. And to spend time around Don was an absolute great pleasure and great honor. And between those of us on the front of the panel, oh my gosh, we got asked all kinds of different questions about how we got into hunting, what influence Jack O'Connor had on our life, on our careers, and what role he played as far as we were concerned in popularizing hunting, and many other questions. And the answers were really interesting. I had my recorder set up. Unfortunately, don't really have problems very often with SD cards, but for whatever reasons, I had a SD card that would not record, or even though it said it was going, it was recording, it did not. So humbly apologize for that, because I had some of the responses from those in front of the table, as far as I'm concerned, were absolutely fabulous. Swalmer was asked a question, and with words, he painted a photograph, if you will, and moving photograph, like a video clip or a movie that was out of this world, and showed how truly articulate he is when it comes to not only writing, but telling a story as well. And of course, Zumbo is always full of stories and full of knowledge, and has been able to do so much, particularly in North America. He's hunted outside of North America as well, too, in Africa. He used to go to Botswana, but you don't really hear a whole lot about that, because he was kind of Mr. Elk when you got right down to it. It was, Zumbo, that years ago started promoting using a bugle call. He kind of popularized it, and he would take a piece of copper tubing, and with that copper tubing, he was able to mimic the sound of a bull elk bugling, and then he also helped develop the cow calls, which really, I think, a lot of times are more important when it comes to hunting elk, particularly if you're hunting elk during the time when they're fairly vocal. And with the cow calls, even after the bulls are no longer vocal, those can play an important role in getting elk close to you, or calming elk down if you're on a stalk. And of course, Jim too has written so many different books, and which are out of this world good. But that particular group of us that was there, that was absolutely fantastic to spend time with those guys and the people that are out in the audience. And one of the guys that was out in the audience was Joe Arterburn. Many of y'all will remember Joe for being with Cabela's for years and years and years. The mayor of Sidney, Nebraska for a while, too. And Joe is a fabulous outdoor writer in his own right, and wrote under his name and some other names as well, too, and wrote back pages on some of the publications, and just really great to spend time with Joe. And never really got to hunt with Joe in the past. Me and I crossed paths a lot of times. Either I was going in hunting camp and he was coming out, or I was coming out and he was going in. So, but absolutely a great guy. And again, all those folks that were there. And one of the things that was so special about this event was to spend time with Bradford O'Connor, Jack's younger son, with he and his lovely wife. And got a chance to really sit down and visit with him. I'd met Bradford O'Connor several years ago when they were promoting the Jack O'Connor Center. He and Buck Buckner, who really kind of helped put that together. And a lot of you know, too, that Buck is one of these guys who is truly an authority on O'Connor in that time frame, and also very much involved with conservation programs at the Boone and Crockett Club. But to be able to sit down with Brad and let him tell some of the stories of the times that he got to spend with his dad many, many years ago, and a great writer in his own right, who for years was with the newspaper and other things there in Seattle, Washington. But what an absolutely fantastic individual to spend a little time with, and was able to get a photograph of Bradford O'Connor, Jim Zumbo, and me, and oh my gosh, I'm so truly honored to have been involved with that. Like I said, it's been on my bucket list for years to visit that center, and then to be there as an invited guest, as a speaker. Just, oh my goodness, I don't know how to put it in words, to be very frank with you. Now, there was another aspect to that as well, too. There's an absolutely out-of-this-world Canadian artist named Rick Taylor. Rick Taylor has produced life-size and larger-than-life-size bronzes and smaller bronzes, of course, for many, many years. I first met Rick years ago when I worked for U.S. companies as herbologist on properties in Texas and Colorado. got a call one day, and it was Rick Taylor, and he says, I understand you've got some odd dad in a situation where I can study them a little bit and maybe be able to shoot one. And I said, yes, sir, I do. And we talked a little bit, and he says, here's what I'll do. He says, I will donate several bronzes, and then also one of the odd dad that I do to the owner of the property if we can work out a deal where I can spend 4 or 5 days looking at odd dad, looking at musketeer, and then taking a ram, and so I can take him apart and really look at the musketeer and the bone structure, and of course, he said the horns as well. And then he said, I love the fact they have the mane down the front and then the shafts. So I called the owner and Max and Carolyn Williams and said, told them the same thing. They go, absolutely, we know who Rick Taylor is. We've seen his work. So Rick came down, and he and I spent several days looking for Oddad. Now, we had one particular trap, if you will. It was a high-fence place. We had about 60 Oddad in there. It was about 100 acres. Half of it was brush. Half of it was open. And it took several days. Thankfully, Rick had several days before we were able to really get to see any of them. And then it took 2 more days after that for us to finally put him onto a ram that he could shoot. And then he and I basically dissected this ram muscle by muscle. And he produced an unbelievably beautiful bronze of it. And the reason I bring up Rick is because Rick has done, kind of followed O'Connor in a lot of different ways. He's a sheep hunter and has taken the Grand Slam several times, and he's produced unbelievable bronze down at Storm, Mexico, and Hermosillo of a desert bighorn. He's done the same thing with a doll ram up in Alaska. He's done the same thing with the stone sheep in British Columbia, and then, of course, the Rocky Mountain ram there in the Rocky Mountain area as well, too. So they were looking for somebody to put together a bronze that they could put out front. And of course, Rick's name came up very quickly. And again, he had kind of followed O'Connor around in terms of going to some of the same places that O'Connor had hunted in years past. Well, he thought about it for a little bit, and he envisioned with him, and he was telling us, he said, you know, he said, I've got sheep, bighorn sheep of different species, scattered all over the place in terms of bronzes. And he said, you know, one of the things that O'Connor loved to do as well, he said he loved to hunt mule deer. And so he said, I thought about it for a little bit. And of course, Idaho, he said, is absolutely known for having produced some of the biggest mule deer in the world. So I decided that the proper animal to do a bronze of for the Jack O'Connor Hunting Heritage and Learning Center was a mule deer. So I produced a mule deer bronze, and oh my gosh, did he ever. It's a time and a half, 1.5 life size of a big old mule deer who's following the tracks of another one kind of up a slope. It's a non-typical, and it is an absolutely fantastic bronze, unbelievably beautiful. And I'm sure that if you're interested, you can go to just Google Rick Taylor bronzes or Rick Taylor Studios, or you can go to the website for the Jack O'Connor Hunting Heritage Center, and that is just www.jack-o-connor.org, the Jack-O'Connor.org website. And I'm sure there's some photographs there as well of that particular bronze. I had the pleasure, too, while I was up there to spend time with Lee Newton. Lee and I have been friends for a while as well, too. Lee used to hunt some of the property that I used to lease years ago in Kentucky when he was with Alco Aluminum. But Lee is also he is probably the authority when it comes to Ruger number ones. I've bought several Ruger number ones from him over the years, and hope to buy a few more of them from him as well, too. And Lee and I were up there together, actually roomed in the Grand Hotel there together. And one of the things while we were there, they were closing out the sponsors, if you will, of the Jack O'Connor bronze that of mule deer that Rick did. And while he was there, Lee got to be the last person to be a sponsor on that before they closed out to put a bronze plaque out in front of the sponsor. So, Lee, I'm kind of jealous of you. I know you're listening to this. Great to spend time with you, but I wish I could have been one of them on that list as well, too. So congratulations on that, by the way. So that event was an absolutely fantastic time up there. It's an annual thing and generally held, I suppose, in the middle part of June. And good Lord willing, if I'm not a speaker up there next year, and they switch out speakers every year, so I doubt that I'll be there officially as a speaker. But if there's any way I can slip away and head to that when that event is going on, I can promise you I will be there. And two, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about it, as I said, the center is absolutely fabulous, filled with mounts, filled with memorabilia. There's a learning center attached to it as well, too, where they hold all kinds of great things. And that's on the Hells Canyon State Park, the Idaho Hells Canyon State Park grounds. Beautiful, beautiful grounds and an absolutely fantastic facility. But you can learn more, as I said, by going to www.jack-connor.org. And, yeah, I think you'll be glad you did if you go there, because you'll learn a few things about O'Connor and some of the great things he did. But what an absolute great facility. They're doing so much good for a lot of different things, and particularly in the promotion of hunting and conservation. So if you're not a Jack O'Connor Museum, if you want to call it that, member, you ought to consider becoming a member there as well, too. Several amenities involved, but what a great group of people, and what a great facility, and all the good things they're doing. Got a hunt coming up this year. I've got two antelope hunt coming up, and want to just barely touch on those. Seems like this is the year for me to attain some of my bucket list things, being a speaker, as I mentioned at the O'Connor event, but also for years I've wanted to be on a team of one of the eight teams that they have of three-man teams, I need to add, at the Landers One-Shot Antelope Hunt. Now, this goes back to about 1940 when this was established, and all the monies that are derived from this, it goes into basically water for wildlife scattered throughout the Wyoming type of area. But I think, too, now they also have expanded some of the to take some of that money to expand it to some of the other states as well, too. And this is an interesting group of people. Goes back to a lot of the old-time cowboys, if you will, not just the cowboys that played on the silver screen, like Roy Rogers and Robert Fuller, and the list is very long there, but also some of the real cowboys like Casey Tibbs. If you've seen some of the movies from the 1950s and 60s where there's somebody riding a bronking horse, bucking horse, that is, pretty good chance if it's a movie or a TV show that Casey Tibbs was the guy that was riding that horse and playing the part of somebody else. They were kind of the stunt doubled, or he was kind of the stunt double for lots of different people when it had to do with riding rough stock. But lots and lots of people, astronauts, governors. This year, thanks to the efforts of Chris Sells. Chris is the marketing manager and a bunch of other things for Heim Rifles here in the USA. Fabulous guns. And he somehow or another was able to talk the leadership at the One-Shot Antelope Hunt to allow us to have a team this year that's comprised of Chris, Phil Massaro, who is a dear friend and editor, among other things, of Gun Digest. And I've done a few things there for him and looking forward to do some more with him. And had him on the stage a time or two at the DSC convention when we did the Meet the Legends. Great, great guy, great writer, great hunter, and can't say enough good things. Matter of fact, I got to do the foreword for a book that he and his dad co-authored together about trapping and collecting furs. I'm truly honored about that. But the three of us will be called the team, two Texans and a Yankee. And, of course, Chris is from Texas as I am. And so that kind of gives you an idea where Massaro fits into this as a Yankee. Still trying to decide for sure which gun I'm going to take. I'm visiting a little bit with Chris Sells and about a Heim rifle, but really kind of leaning to a Ruger number one, simply because this is a one-shot antelope hunt. You get one shot, and that's it. You know, either hit or you miss, and I'm going to start getting real serious about practicing here very shortly. I will tell you that whatever Ruger number one or whatever Heim rifle, but I really am leaning to that Ruger number one I take, and I've got a choice between a 257 Roberts, a 275 Rigby, a 270, a 30-06, a 300 H&H, and a couple of others there that I'm looking at very seriously. A 280, right at the top of the list right now is my 280 Ackley Improved. It's got some unbelievable wood on it, which to me would add to that hunt. Of course, I'll be shooting Hornady ammo, and the rifle will be topped with either a Trijicon Heron or an AccuPoint. I'm not real sure yet which one I'm going to use there with the bullet compensator thing. It's in the Huron with the stadia wires below the primary crosshair. I'm playing with it a little bit, and I need to find out at which range I am proficient at, meaning that in this particular entrance, I don't think you can use a commercial rest. I think you might be able to shoot from prone. You might be able to shoot with using a sagebrush as possibly a rest, or from a sitting position, or there may be set up to where you can't use any kind of rest other than either standing offhand or sitting and using that rest, and kind of depending on where you're hunting, it's going to maybe vegetation too tall to go prone or even sit. So I've got to start shooting and see which rifle I shoot best at different ranges, and then also to determine at what ranges I can no longer put that bullet within about an 8-inch circle, if you will, because that's kind of the kill zone on most pronghorn. That's the vital area of the heart and lung area. So got a bunch of stuff like that coming up this year. We've got some other hunts I'm really looking forward to. I'm being in Baja hunting their version of either the mule deer or blacktail. I'm not sure what the true taxonomy is or on that particular animal, but I'll be there in October doing the got a pronghorn hunt coming up in New Mexico with a dear old friend of mine as well too. We're hunting Russell Stacy's lease out there, but Ken Darcy, who is the CEO and president of Remington Arms, he and I are going to be hunting together for pronghorn in New Mexico in August for an episode of Trijicon's World of Sports and Field, and then I'll be hunting pronghorn in September on the one-shot antelope hunt, and October be going to Baja, and then in between all that and afterwards, I've got a bunch of whitetail hunts coming up this year. Got in on a lease in western Texas that's just outside of Sterling City, which is out west of San Angelo, oh, maybe 40, 50 miles at the most. And that place is under an MLD, which means managed land permit, that allows numbers to be determined of harvest by the consulting wildlife biologist from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. But there's a good chance that with as dry as it is out there this year, we'll probably have to shoot several bucks and several does to reduce that population to where it can, the habitat can handle it handily without experiencing death losses due to starvation and those kind of things. So going to be hunting several deer out there this year. And a lot of those I'm going to be hunting with my Taurus Raging Hunter in either a 44 mag or 454 Casull. Topped, of course, with the Trijicon SRO or RMR red dot sight, and no doubt in the 44 mag I'll be shooting the 240 grain Hornady XTP load, and probably in the 454, probably the 300 grain. I'm going back and forth with that and one of the other loads that they have, but that one is extremely accurate, and so I got a feeling those are going to be the choices. And got a bunch of other hunts from Rattling Hunts, done a bunch of things this year too, as we had hoped with my partner in H3 Whitetail Solutions, Brandon Houston. Brandon's got a place that I'm going to get to hunt this year, and we're going to take some does and some bucks off of it as well, too. And then, of course, I'll be back on my own property this year, too. I'm going to try to save that mostly for my daughters and son-in-laws and my grandkids, but I'll be out there with them as well, too. So got a lot of things planned. Got a lot of things planned here around the campfire as well, too. We've got some truly, truly special guests coming up. Like I said, hopefully next week we'll have Jim McQuett on. And I want to try to get in touch with J. Wayne Fears, who was just inducted into the Georgia Outdoor Hall of Fame, and rightfully so. And, oh, there's a bunch of other old-timers about the same age that I am I want to visit with and get them to tell some hunting stories from years past and kind of get caught up with what they're doing as well, too. So hopefully you'll join me right here around the campfire. But before we do, I need to mention, too, that, of course, Hayden Outdoors sponsors a segment here on this particular podcast, and also the Sportsman's Life, the TV show that I do with Jeff Rice and Luke Clayton, called Sportsman's Life there on Carbon TV. And, of course, you can get this podcast through Carbon TV now as well, too, which I'm so very proud and pleased to be about, to be there with them. I mean, my gracious, that is the site, as far as I'm concerned, www.carbontv.com. It is the site for anything having to do with outdoor programming in terms of television-type programs and also in terms of the best outdoor podcast to be had anywhere. And, again, truly honored to be there. But as I mentioned, Hayden Outdoors, which is the brand that sells land. Now, that there's a whole lot that goes with that in terms of they've got some of the best, if not the best, agents there are when it comes to anything having to do, particularly with rural properties. These guys are all serious hunters and fishermen. Most of them have hunted all over the country. Most of them have got some biology background, either in terms of having managed ranches themselves that they've owned or for others. And some of them have degrees in wildlife, and some of them just have a tremendous amount of practical experience. And that's one of the great things about those guys. If you'll get in touch with any one of their agents, and you can just go to HaydenOutdoors.com and no matter where you live and find out who the agent is, if you've got land you want to sell, they're going to get you the very best price, and they're going to get you the very best buyers to where you're going to be really proud that you went through them to get your land sold, knowing that it's going to be taken care of in the future. And of course, if you're interested in buying recreational land or investment land or anything having to do with land outside of the city limits, these guys know that land. They know the wildlife populations. They know everything literally from beneath the ground to including the soil, through the vegetation, to what animals live there, what the realities of that properties are, what the potentials of that property are. And also, we'll tell you that if you're looking at a piece of property with them and it doesn't quite fit what you think, and you're kind of on the fence about whether or not you ought to be buying this one or looking at something else, they'll downright tell you that, hey, I don't think it's quite going to accomplish what you want to. Let's go look at another piece of property. And, you know, that sometimes is every bit as important. Well, actually, a lot of times it's more important than say, hey, you need to buy this, you need to buy this, you need to buy this kind of thing, as I know some other real estate places do. So if you're looking for a piece of property from anything having to do with wildlife or the outdoors, or as I mentioned, trying to also sell any kind of property that's outside the city limits, these are the guys you want to get in touch with. They know the land. And as I mentioned, Hayden Outdoors indeed is the brand that sells land. So get in touch with them and you'll be really glad you did. That's the one thing I can assure you of. Ladies and gentlemen, I really appreciate you being with us around the campfire this morning. It's been an absolutely great time visiting with you folks, and I truly, truly look forward to being with you next time. And like I said, hopefully next time we'll have Mr. Jim Bequette on, and if not, we'll find somebody else that's almost equally as qualified as he is to talk about hunting trips up north in terms of caribou adventures and in terms of grizzly bear adventures. Look forward to seeing y'all right back here next week. Thank you so much for joining us around the campfire.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by The Crown Bar in LaGrange, Texas, H3 Whitetail Solutions, Remington, Texas Wildlife Association, TRHP Outdoors,